Chapter 27, June. While on my way down to the lobby for my mom to pick me up, I see Bette sneak out of the light, a satisfied smirk spoiling her usually pristine features. She startles when she sees me, but then grins, as if we're sharing a secret.
"See ya,"
she says, then prances silently down the hall in her slippers, still dressed in her practice clothes. As I watch her walk away, something vile bubbles inside me. She's so nonchalantly mean, it's almost like she doesn't realize she's doing it. When I'm mean, I do it on purpose and acknowledge it. And no one ever pays Bette back for all the stuff she does, even though she does a good job of covering her tracks. Most of the time. People are too afraid to really accuse her. She's got girls lined up to take the blame. Today, Bette's going to get hers. I'm feeling vengeful. Not that Bette's been mean to me, but she hasn't been nice either. The room is empty when I get back, so I head straight to Gigi's desk and open the drawer where she hid those naked pictures. The ones of Bette and Alec. The ones Bette, no doubt, planted to cause Gigi pain. I want to anonymously turn them in. They break every modesty school rule in the student handbook. They'll land Bette and Alec as collateral damage in deep trouble. The Russians hate heavy dancers and American teenage customs and modern choreography. But above all else, they despise inappropriate sexual displays. Two kids were suspended last year for being caught making out in one of the stairwells. I riffle through the drawer, but the pictures are gone. So I look through another and a third, but they're nowhere to be found. Like they never existed at all. Instead, there are half a dozen little red paper roses, each a different style. No doubt another token from Alec. And there, tucked away, is a little charm. One I've seen Gigi wearing hidden in the folds of her tutus on important rehearsal days. A good luck charm. Small and golden and irrepressibly sweet. It infuriates me. What does this girl need a lucky charm for? She's got all the luck in the world. We've been getting along lately, but minutes later, I'm standing in the light closet, pinning the charm high up on the wall. The one that's covered with photos of dancers floating, gliding, laughing, shining, living the life I want to live. The life in the spotlight that I'll never have. The one that comes so easily to girls like Gigi and Bette. I can't stop myself. It's like my fingers have impulses of their own. I'm shaking, but I'm not quite sure if it's anger or sadness. I look at the little rose dangling there, like it's abandoned and will die, and wonder what I'm doing. I wonder how I got here. What propelled me to this point? I'm just tired of being second best, of having to work so hard for everything. My mom is still on my case about my grades. I don't have any leads on my father, and Jae-hee seems to have slipped back into his old ways, keeping his head down and acting like I don't exist when he comes to visit Seojin. It seems like she's got a stronger hold on him than ever, so maybe my plan wasn't so smart after all. I curl up on the bench and stare at the walls I've spent so much time absorbing, reading all the uplifting quotes and words of encouragement. Scattered throughout, of course, are biting little notes meant to be seen and to provoke pain. There are a few about Gigi, as expected, but a couple mention Bette and her fall from grace. I'm sure they just roll right off her, that she doesn't feel them at all. I wish I could be that way, impenetrable. But despite my facade, every little thing gets to me. I stare up at a batch of photos of Seojin and her crew in a photo booth at Times Square, laughing their pretty little heads off. When was the last time I laughed like that? Not since Seojin abandoned me, I realize with a pang. Scrawled below the photo are a bunch of comments in Korean. The only thing I can really make out are a few names. Haeji, Seojin, Jae-hee. And then I see it. Mine, Ijeon, and a long rant of text that I can't really begin to understand. What might it say? Nothing good, that's for sure. I look closely at the words, recognizing a character here and there, but nothing substantial. Maybe I should feel happy to be on the walls in here. That means someone thinks I'm good. Someone thinks I'm a threat. I snap a photo with my phone and head back to the room, determined to figure it out. I wish I could just ask my mother what it says, but she can never know. Besides, it's not like we're speaking much at all. They sent me packing for the weekend, orders from Nurse Connie to get me back up to the correct weight. I've been very careful about things lately. The vomiting isn't enough, so I've been doing the ellipticals, which is what Liz used to drop weight quickly. But it's worked too well. I've fallen to 101 pounds again, and I'm lucky that Nurse Connie didn't send me home permanently. I laid it on thick about how hard it was to gain those pounds she wanted. She was nice this time, but it's made my mom watch me like I'm a glass figurine on the verge of falling off a table. Still, she doesn't really bother to talk to me, unless she's ordering me to do something.
The Kwans have invited us for church dinner, and we're going, my mom says, peeking into my bedroom.
I can feel her gaze on my face as she conveniently cleans the hall outside my bedroom, waiting to see me roll my eyes or purse my lips or respond in some way she finds unrefined, disrespectful, ugly. After our last dinner, she said she won't tolerate any more disrespect. Otherwise, I'll have to leave the conservatory before the spring performance, which is only a few weeks away, at the end of May. April's nearly over, and the time has been slipping away so fast. Too fast if I want the cast list to change at all. Okay, I say. I would put up a fight, because the last thing I want is to spend the evening being berated by Seijin and seeing her clasp Jaehee's hand. And I'm worried that talks of summer session registration will come up, and I'll have to tell them, because Korean kids don't lie to other Korean adults, that this is my last semester at the school because my mom is putting me in public school. But I know she'll force me to go to the dinner anyway, and I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of all of it. I have no energy. And I don't want to give in and listen to the little voice inside me that says it's because I haven't been eating. Nurse Connie called my mother to check on my weight, but my mom squawked about American fat issues and the Korean body and how healthy I really am. How I eat as much as any other dancer. She defends me to the others, but she's watching my every move. I can't go to the bathroom without her hovering outside, ear pressed to the door. I text Jaehee again and he doesn't respond. Again. My head and heart can't handle it. But I'm getting stir crazy. I stayed in my room all Saturday afternoon, then spent the 3 hours this morning Googling Korean to see if I can decipher the message from the wall in the light. If I tried a little harder on the internet, I probably could figure it out. But I thought Jaehee might be able to read it for me. Boys like to feel useful. He's still under Seijin's lock and key. We've been texting for weeks, but there are long silences in between. Sometimes he responds, usually late at night, when I know Seijin won't have access to his phone. But mostly, he doesn't. I just don't understand him. Is this how all boys are? Or is it just my luck? Exhausted, I throw myself on the bed and pop an old ballet into the ancient VCR my mother never got rid of. After watching Eleanor perform in The Nutcracker, the successful understudy story that should have been mine, I don't even want to think about what's next for me. Being another understudy, being behind Gigi again, being taken from the conservatory, being a regular girl. My mom reminded me again over dinner last night. The two of us at the ugly plastic kitchen table, and all she could do was go on and on about our arrangement and how I failed to secure a role, and that pretty Eleanor girl, and how truly special dancers always move ahead. Leaning in through the doorframe, she hovers, waiting for me to acknowledge her again.
"We will leave in 1 hour,"
she says finally, as I continue to sulk in silence.
"I am going to run to the store for treats to bring. You get ready. Cover up, please. There is a dress in my closet you will wear. Much nicer than what you have. Appropriate. Again, I don't even consider fighting back. I'm sure it's some ugly, itchy monstrosity, but throwing a tantrum will only delay the inevitable. It almost feels better to be so exhausted that I don't have choices. I will do what I'm told. No guesswork, no grand plans, no battles. Just a nod of my head and the hollow feeling in my stomach keeping me calm. When she's gone, I walk like a zombie to her room and into her closet. We are the same size, my mom and I. Maybe I am a few pounds lighter, but it's not by much. She has kept her ballerina body longer than her love of the ballet. As if what she really loved about her time at the conservatory was being able to control the size and shape of her frame. She liked the routine, the distinct weight of structure, the invisibility of a ballerina's body in a sea of women with hips and breasts and loud clothing. She liked the matching leotards, the matching torsos, the matching movements. I can't tell which dress in her closet is meant for me. They all look more or less the same. Dark, somber colors, and high necklines, and ill-fitting skirts that will fall inches below my knees. I dig to find one with tags still on it. I don't usually step far into my mom's closet, but as I flip through her depressing wardrobe, I go farther in and reach my hands out in front of me to the shelves normally shielded by the clothing. I know her off-season shoes are stored back there, but as I've never been desperate to borrow flat, awkward boots or outdated half-inch witch heels, I've never done much exploring. My hands hit a box. It's wooden and easy to slide. A little too large for the wobbly shoe shelves, it falls to the floor when my hand brushes against it. Clunk! I know what's in there before I even slide the top open. A photograph, my mom, just a year or two older than me, wrapped in the embrace of an attractive older man. The man is blurry, but I can make out a few details. Blonde hair, bright blue eyes, the kind of smile that gets a girl to take off her pants or fall in love or give up ballet. She's in a costume for the ballet Don Quixote, looking up at him like he's the only thing she sees. My heart's pounding and I have to sit down on the floor of the closet. The bottoms of the matching sad dresses brush my forehead, my ears, get in my eyes. But it doesn't matter. There's more in the box. A love letter from a man named Dom to my mom. And then, a letter from a lawyer to my mom. It's full of legal jargon and huge, scary, but ultimately meaningless words. My father's name is covered with black ink, but the gist of it is, he admits the baby is his, and as long as she keeps it quiet, the baby will be provided for and come into a great deal of money when she turns 25. She. Me. I'm the baby in the documents. I want to throw up. Not the way I usually do. This is a stronger impulse. A necessary reaction. A sickening feeling in my stomach rather than an insistence that I empty myself. In fact, if anything, I'd like to hang on to as much of myself as possible. I'd like to fill out in the moment, grow larger, so that I have more to hang on to. Because as it is now, it feels like I am falling a great, great distance into something unseeable. The Grand Canyon, a black hole, a Bermuda Triangle of confusion. Something that epic. I cover my mouth so that I don't vomit in the closet. It feels like I will only ever have this one moment to gather information. Like these documents and photographs and evidence of who I am will disappear the second I leave the space. I swallow down the liquid that rises and threatens to spew out. There are a few more pictures of my mom dancing, of her lithe ballerina body in motion. My mom had me young, so if she had really worked at it, perhaps she could have still been dancing, even now. If she'd cared about it, she could have had me, and then gotten back into shape. Or she could have chosen not to have me. She could have chosen dance. Why didn't she? I would have.
That's when I finally throw up. There's not much there, mostly water, and I manage to get only a little on the closet floor. Mostly, I manage to hit myself, a disgusting low moment, followed by a long shower and some serious scrubbing of my mother's closet floor. I worry that I am scrubbing so hard that the surface will be damaged, that it will show the scars of my desperation. I curl up in bed, without the dress, without dry hair, without any intention of getting to the Kwan's stupid party. I try not to think. This discovery is so powerful, so large, that I can't take it all at once. It is the largest piece of cake, and I only want a lick of frosting to tide me over. Because I haven't eaten in years. Maybe I have never eaten. And now there is chocolate cake in my face, and it's too much.
You ready, Ijeon?
My mom calls up when she's back from the store. I am supposed to be scrubbed clean and in her ugly dress by now. Instead, I have a towel wrapped around my body, and I'm in the fetal position in my too hard twin bed. I don't respond.
Ijeon, time to go!
I hate the sound of her voice, and when she switches to Korean, I hate it even more. Sounds clang against each other. I don't reply, and I hear her feet scamper up the stairs. She doesn't knock before barging into my room. She never does.
What do you have to hide?
She always says when I tell her to knock first.
Ijeon!
She screeches when she sees me, undressed and unkempt and unwilling on my bed.
I'm not going,
I mumble into my pillow.
Where is your dress? Put on clothes. I'm not going,
I say again. My mom puts a hand to her heart, like that tiny yelp is enough to give her a heart attack.
Now, Ijeon, you don't talk back to me this way. Disobedient. I said no. Who is making you like this? I let you stay at that terrible school, wasting your time being in the core, and all you learn about is how to become disrespectful.
The school is not the problem, I say. This is my chance, I guess, to confront her. But I'm not ready. Information this powerful needs a purpose, and though my head is still spinning, and I swear I can still smell my own vomit on my hands, and that man's face is bouncing around my head like some sick screensaver, I pull myself together just the tiniest bit.
I can pull you out of school now!
She crosses her arms over her chest and glares at me with disgust. I am the worst thing that ever happened to her. I know that now more than ever.
5 minutes, then we go, she says.
It's a conclusion, not a question.
I know,
I say. But she doesn't get it.
Ijeon, get dressed. We will be late.
She turns to leave. Who is my father? I whisper. She freezes. I saw the photos. I read the court papers. I know about the money, but you blacked out the name. Who is he? Is it Dominic? She flies at me, cheeks tight, eyes narrow.
You don't go through my things!
She slaps me across my face, as angry as I've ever seen her. She hits me again, and I grab at her hands, stopping them from flying, pinning them down. She may be my mom, and I may be small, but what I've learned is that I'm strong, much stronger than I look, much stronger than they think I am. Within seconds, I'm the one on top, holding her still, so she can't hit me anymore, so she can't hurt me anymore.
Mom, you listen to me now,
I say, my voice steel.
I'm going back to the school tonight, and I'm taking the box with me. I have a right to know who I am, where I came from, and you can't stop me from finding out more. You have no right.
I stand, pulling my towel tightly around me.
If you want me to keep quiet about all this while I look,
I say, pointed, knowing she couldn't bear the shame, the humiliation of such exposure. Then I will not hear another word about public school and college and leaving the conservatory. You will support me, even applaud me, in pursuing my goals, because I know now that dancing is in my blood. I've always known, and no one, not even you, is going to stop me.
Chapter 28. Gigi. Outside Studio B, I stretch alone along the floor. I want to start the week away from them all. I need some time away from the drama. After I screamed about the disgusting cookie, people started calling me crazy, like Bet. And I'm not crazy. That's the last word anyone from home would use to describe me. I need a break from the stairs. I need the entire month of April to go away. I need to start over. The petite Roz, whose morning class has just let out, bound through the hall. They get quiet and whisper and slow down when they see me. Gigi's so beautiful. The best level 7 girl. I want to be Giselle, like her. Did you know her real name is Giselle? Just like the ballet? She has perfect feet. She can leap higher than anyone else. Their tiny praises make me smile. I remember feeling the same way about the first ballerina I ever saw. She moved across the stage like an angel. Her tutu was a cloud of stars trapped around her waist. A little one approaches. Gigi? Her voice is small and fragile. I look up and a round pink face grins at me. At first I flinch, thinking one of the older girls put her up to this, only to embarrass me or play another prank. Can I have your autograph? She says with a sweet mouse-like voice. I relax. Try to erase the increasing paranoia that I feel. I try to follow Alex's advice, Mama's advice, and chalk all of this stuff up to mind games. Hazing that won't work. Pretty please? She pleads. I wonder why in the world she'd want my autograph. I'm nobody. By the look of her perfect form, she's probably been at the conservatory since she was 5 and seen many dancers more talented than me. She holds out a pencil and her flower-dotted notebook. It would be my pleasure. I riffle through pages of doodles and scribbles to a blank page where I write, "You're a star," and my name. She's beside herself with excitement when I hand her back the notebook. She curtsies and returns to her group, showing off her page. Morky rounds the corner, so I slip into the studio where all the girls are stretching, their legs pressed against mirrors, hangover bars, or in splits on the floor, and some lie on their backs, with their heels pulled toward their shoulders. I click my cell phone off, ignoring a call from Mama and a smiley face message from Alec. I sit next to June, but even she takes a half step away from me as soon as she feels my body too near her own. On another day, I'd care. I wrap a rubber stretchy band around my feet, flexing and pointing until the joints and muscles loosen. But when Victor enters, we all flutter to our places at the bar. We are arranged by height, one after the other, in a line. I'm somewhere in the middle, neither long and lean nor short and petite, sandwiched between Bet and June. Bet's ice-blue gaze travels down my neck, and her sighs of disapproval echo every time I move. Victor's shoes clomp across the wax floor, and his heavy bottom makes the piano bench squeak. Morky walks in and closes the studio door. The petite Roz press their little faces against the glass panels to watch our class. I wink at the little girl who asks for my autograph. She waves frantically until Morky shoots them all a look. They settle down and watch us. Victor starts the slow piano chords that signal our warm-up. We move through the positions, easing our muscles into the movements. Morky walks from girl to girl, starting with the shortest. Morky draws near. She lingers on June, remarking on a hair that has fallen out of place and on how slender she's looking. She gives a nod of approval in Bet's direction, not even bothering to touch her. Bet's body has become perfect. Legs long and muscular in the right places. Strong along the inner thigh, where ballerinas need the most strength. And soft on the exterior. Her chest flat and delicate, and her hands fall just the right way. She must be working hard. I hold fifth position, turning out from my hip, hoping she'll pass me by. Drops of sweat bead along my forehead. I'm not warmed up. I'm forcing my body to comply. I should have stretched and dealt with all the stares and whispers. Morky scans my arm in second position. The muscle twitches. But man tendu jeté in second, she commands. I sweep my leg out to the side and up 45 degrees. She catches it and rotates my leg so it's turned out more. I feel the pinch in my hip, but swallow down the pain. Point! I obey. Beautiful arches. She rubs the bottom of my foot. Girls, Gigi has the best ballet foot. The instep almost folds over completely. My cheeks flame as the others look on and pressure builds in my stomach. I feel Bet's cold blue gaze from behind. Morky pinches the interior of my thigh and lifts her eyebrows. Then she nudges my butt. Eat lean protein, she says and drops my leg. Especially for a performance coming up. Need to lengthen. She motions to Victor and class begins. The piano chords are gentle, so we can ease our muscles into familiar positions. The mirrors reflect our 16 bodies moving in unison, filling the space with silent energy. I feel better. Dancing erases all the nerves, fear, anxiety, paranoia. Everything is fine. We do an hour of exercises in small combinations. Afterward, she lets us get water and change into pointe shoes. During the quick break, I wrap white tape around each toe, then swaddle them with cloth. With practice motions, I pull out one shoe, slip it on, and tie the ribbons. I dig back into the bag for the other shoe. I can't find it. The other girls return from the water break and change into their pointe shoes while I continue to comb through my bag. I have to take everything out to fish out the missing one. The shoe is hidden at the bottom. Everyone assembles in the center. I'm late to the lineup, and Bet taps a foot on the ground like she has been waiting for me all day instead of just a few seconds. Morky's face is a solemn line of potential disappointment. I slip on the right one and quickly lace the ribbons. It feels a little too snug, but I don't have time to fiddle with it. I bolt to the center of the room to my position. I feel something thick and strange in my shoe, but ignore it. Morky demonstrates the combination, and Victor starts to play. I rise on point. Whatever I felt in the heel of my slipper sinks toward my toes, and suddenly a sharp pain shoots through my foot. The pain makes me collapse to the ground. I grab at my leg. My eyes close. My body wants to shut down. Warm blood pools in my shoe, the red seeping through the pink like a deepening sunset. The other girls stop. Your shoe is bloody, someone shouts. The girls huddle around and Morky pushes through. I claw off my pointe shoe. Morky holds my foot and pulls off the white padding. She pulls back my tights, ripping the bottom open farther. Something is lodged in my skin. My eyes blur with tears and I can't see what it is. Blood races down my arch. Everyone gasps. Everyone except Bet, who covers her mouth with one hand and practically runs away, like she can't handle the sight of blood. If I wasn't in so much pain, I'd hate her for it. What is it? I scream in pain. There's shock on the others' faces, but in some, I also read a bit of glee. Morky turns to Victor and shouts something in Russian. He runs from the room. Moments later, the boys pour into the studio. Andre rushes toward me first, but Alec grabs his arm and shoves him aside. He kneels next to me. Take her to nurse, Alec, Morky says. And June, go get Monsieur Kozlov. She touches her forehead. How did something like this happen? I examine my foot and see a piece of the glass. Then I see there are three, maybe four pieces. More blood trickles out. Morky brushes my hand away. "Don't touch," she says. I cry out in pain, and the look of my foot makes me feel nauseous. Alec lifts me from the floor like a doll. "I can walk," I say. "No," he says. I try to fight my way out of his arms. I'm not weak. "Just let me carry you," he says. "You're hurt." "Put me down," I say a little too harshly. He obeys. I hobble ahead. I scream out in pain and anger, both at whoever did this to me and my bloody foot. The girls shuffle out of the way. Their faces twist in horrified expressions at my outburst. No one looks at my foot. They all cower in fear and gaze at their own feet. Bet turns her back to us and rests her hand on her head. She paces in a circle. "Oh my God. Oh my God." I think I hear her say under her breath, but the pain stuffs up every bit of me, even my ears, so I can't be too sure. I'm hearing everything through thick layers. People say things. I watch their mouths open and close, faces twisting in awkward expressions, but the voices muffled and clogged, thick and slow and unintelligible. My head is light, and my limbs feel like they don't belong. People are buoys drifting away from me. Even June steps back, and I can't see her anymore. Heat gathers in my cheeks and radiates from my skin. Beneath, the light brown is red. Alec catches my arm before I trip. I smell his cologne and sweat, and his warm palms make me feel like I'm floating. "It'll be okay," he whispers close to my ear, and I almost believe him, but I feel the throb of the glass caught in my foot. Morky follows closely behind in hysteria. I feel faint and black stars twinkle before my eyes. My heart squeezes and burns and thumps too fast in my chest. By the time we reach Nurse Connie's office, a crowd is in the corridor. The petit Ras and their parents, the younger dancers, the administrative staff, and Mr. Lucas. Mr. K appears, his face long and grave, as he takes my arm from Alex. He lifts me up onto the examining table. Nurse Connie pulls the tights up further. She rotates my ankle, exposing the shiny slivers of glass poking out of my foot. I grit my teeth, but can't stop wincing every time her hand's near my foot, anticipating the pain, which I know will be excruciating. "Where did this come from?" Nurse Connie asks. "Did you break something in your room? Or did something break in your dance bag?" she asks, like she already knows the answer. "I don't know," I try to answer, my breath heavy. "She was in class," Alex says. Mr. K and Nurse Connie exchange glances.
"You and I both know someone did this,"
Mr. K says to Nurse Connie. They all sigh. I'm guessing this is not the first time they've seen something like this. I try to focus on their faces, but my eyes fight to stay open. The pain in my foot and the effort it takes to worry about what's going to happen to me exhaust me. "Deep breaths," Nurse Connie says. "Stay relaxed. It'll keep your heart rate down. Close your eyes." She picks up the school phone and calls the hospital. "I'm going to take you to the emergency room." I also hear her leave a message for my parents and Aunt Leah. "Do I have to?" I ask. "Can't you just clean me up?" "It's protocol," Nurse Connie says. "I want to ensure that there's no tissue damage." That's when the whole thing hits me. All of it. Everything I've worked so hard for all these years could end here. With this. What one of these evil girls will write off as a prank.
"Yes, yes, of course," Mr. K chimes. "Alec, carry her to the RA van. Go with her."
Nurse Connie grabs her bag and my med file. Alex scoops me up, carrying me through the corridor to the front of the school. He doesn't take no for an answer this time, and Mr. K insists. Everyone is out there, whispering and waiting and wondering. I close my eyes and curl my head into Alex's chest. Once we're in the van, he traces circles and hearts and triangles on my palm, and the sensation makes me relax into the seat. As we speed down Columbus Avenue, I feel like I'm not really awake. I fight thoughts about what this injury will do to my foot, to my dancing, to my role. Wind rattles the car windows. The sky is dark and gloomy, ominous. A spring thunderstorm is coming. My foot throbs. I squeeze Alex's hand and finally let him take care of me the way he wants to. "It's gonna be all right," he whispers. "Our pa," I mumble, but he just shakes his head at me. I close my eyes until we arrive at the hospital. We don't have to wait. A nurse ushers us into a private triage room and yanks the curtain. Alec rests me on the bed. "Alec, you have to go to the waiting room," Nurse Connie says. He gives me a concerned look, then retreats. The other nurse closes the drapes. "How did this happen?" I can't answer. Another slew of questions is asked. I barely hear them. Nurse Connie hands the nurse my file. Her health history and most recent physical. My eyes close while Nurse Connie fills her in on all the details. I block out her description of what's wrong with me. The new nurse examines my foot, wipes it with a cold pad that makes it burn. "Big breath," she says. I take the deepest breath my lungs can handle, and she pulls the glass from my foot. There is a surge of pain and release, more blood, more swelling, more heat. I look down at my battered foot. Blood is everywhere, but the source is several deep slashes in my heel that feel like they've cut to the bone. I wonder if this is the end. After all of my mama's worries about my heart, will I ever dance again? I can't bring myself to ask. I don't want to know the answer. "She's going to faint," I hear Nurse Connie say, but I can't get the energy to protest. "She's got a pre-existing condition." Someone moves my head between my knees, and I'm being told to breathe. An oxygen mask is put around my face. A pulse monitor is clipped to my finger. Its beeps are wild, uncontrolled, too fast. The hospital nurse makes a little concerned noise as my vitals fill a screen. Nurse Connie hovers over the silver table where the hospital nurse placed the objects from my foot. She puts on rubber gloves and picks it up with tweezers, holding it into the light. Her face scrunches. "Huh," Nurse Connie says, almost to herself. "Looks like several pieces of a mirror."
Chapter 29. Bet. I stay in Studio G for hours after rehearsal. Even the hallways are empty, everyone hiding in their rooms after Gigi's trip to the hospital. Personally, I haven't felt this ready to dance since the spring cast list was posted, so I go with it. I work on point, aching to feel that crunch in my toes and that absurd new height when I'm balancing on tiptoes like this. I'm best on point. Dancing in flat slippers is one thing, and people like Gigi can get away with their shady technique or particular attitude. I get it. She has personality when she dances, and the audience will sit back thinking they could do it too, sensing her ease and her joy. But point shoes are unforgiving. There's no room for that childish exuberance when your feet are forced into a whole new position and your weight is balanced precariously over the now straight line from your big toe to your hip bone. I grab the bar for balance and work through basic exercises, preparing my muscles for the spasm of confusion that comes when you hoist yourself up into that erect, impossible position. Gigi's mangled foot and bloody slipper flash in my mind. The bright red of her blood, and the sounds of her screams. The whole incident replays, making me push harder. I throw myself into my variation. We all have nails separating from our toes, and purple and yellow bruises that look like modern art painting decorating our feet. But after what happened today, Gigi's tender foot might take on a whole new level of disfigurement. I work harder. That's enough to get my legs fully extended and counting the beats of the dance in my head. I don't want to turn on the music in case of any stragglers. I don't even want the little ones looking in to admire. I just want me and the mirror and the violent images of glass and skin flashing through my head. When I mark myself in the mirror, I see that I'm smiling. I shouldn't be smiling after what happened today. If someone saw me, they'd think I did it. I know they all suspect I'm the one who planted the glass in her slipper. Especially the ones who know I wrote the message on the mirror. Or the other little things. Whoever put the glass in Gigi's shoe was possibly out to get me too. Framing me, knowing I might get blamed. I run through a list of potential suspects. June, for sure. Maybe Will, now that Alec is officially with Gigi. And most definitely Henri, to get back at me for messing with Cassie. I dance harder, hoping the exertion will help me come to definitive conclusions. What am I trying not to think about? The way Alec rushed in and leaped to Gigi's aid the second she made that sad little girl yelp? The way he held her mangled foot in his hands and didn't seem to mind the blood? The look Will managed to give me in spite of all the chaos. Like if Will can't have him, I can't have him either. Like he'd rather see Alec with literally anyone but me. And why do I still care after all these weeks? He's left me. Our on-again, off-again relationship seems off in a way it never has before. I step into a turn, whipping around until I'm a tornado, and can think of nothing else but watching my spot on the wall. 3 pirouettes. 4. I will turn until I can't see Alec or Gigi or any of them anymore. 5. Until I don't think about what I did to Cassie anymore. 6. My supporting leg and ankle tire, wobbling in my point shoe. 7. Alec rushes back into my head. 8. My foot slips from under me, and I stumble. I'm ass down on the floor, lucky to not have scraped my chin or clicked my right hip out of place. But it hurts. A laser of pain that moves from my ankle all the way to my tender knee. If things were going well with me and Alec, he'd show up with a heating pad at just the mention of me being in pain. But everything's a mess between us now, and I need to figure out how to put us back together. I get back onto my toes, like a girl on a horse or a kid on a bike. Or, I'd imagine, a tightrope walker high in the air. It's imperative that I don't give in. If Alec were here, he never would have let me get back up. I rise up, up, up. It feels like stilts, even though it's just a few extra inches. I hang on the bar for a few moments, steadying, controlling, lifting and releasing and drifting into dance again. "You keep losing the core," someone says. The startling sound makes me lose my balance. This time, I grab for the bar before going all the way down, but the pain surges up my right side anyway, like it knows something I don't. I can't fool my body into not feeling it. Crap! I spin around only to see June. She's quiet, I'll give her that. And if I'm being honest, she's probably right. "Sorry, just looking at your form. It's gorgeous. But when you pirouette, you lose your core for a moment and the whole thing falls apart." If Eleanor were saying the same thing, I'd snap at her. But June has the serious look of a teacher or a minister, and I can't find it in myself to dismiss her. I'm all out of mean things today. Her head is cocked, and her eyes look up and down my body, critically, but not cruelly. "Oh," I say. I work my toes back into position and ready myself to go back into the dance. "I think you're really spectacular en pointe," she says. I'm used to the petit Roz saying it, or even sometimes the teachers, but never my peers. Never the girls. It's enough to make me relax onto the soles of my feet again. I wonder what she wants. We've never been friends, or acquaintances even. Obviously, you think I still have work to do, I say. We all do, but I was admiring you before I noticed what you were doing wrong. There's zero inflection, no movement to her words, just flat, emotionless reporting of the situation that keeps me from getting riled up. Oh, well, I guess I'm distracted. I turn away from her again and watch my stomach in the mirror, seeing the little pull when it flexes and the softening when I relax. It helps, sometimes, to see what your body is capable of. By Gigi, she says. Beads of sweat form on my back. Poor thing, I say. She's your roommate, right? Any word? I keep it casual. June's smart. And maybe not as weak as I thought. Been at the hospital for a while, June says. Some people say things carelessly. They let words pop out and roam around, and they don't give much thought to the consequences. June is not one of those people. I don't know why she's telling me this, or what it could even mean, but there's a purpose to the tight little sentence. It's the only time I've heard June offer information about something other than a dancer's technique or weaknesses. The sweat on my back isn't a cluster of beads anymore. It's just a whole mess of damp stickiness. Mr. K has already sent flowers to my room. The way she says the word flowers sounds like she means dog shit. I choose my words carefully. His star needs to feel loved in her time of need. And she's getting plenty of that, she says. And I hope that's not a comment about Alec. I didn't think she'd land Giselle, too, she adds. And I know I can talk a little trash with her about Gigi. I think I've worn Eleanor out with all my thoughts and theories and irritations about her. It's like she's his little pet, I say. His favorite. Just like Cassie was, she says. And I want to do anything to erase that name and any parallels to Gigi. Makes you think, huh? Cassie was Mr. Lucas's niece, and Gigi's probably sleeping with Mr. K, I throw out, probably too sloppily. She's not the type. June shuts down my innuendo. I wish she'd just laughed or smiled or something else. Now it's back to awkwardness with her. I don't reply. I get back onto my toes, work myself up to the tip top, and move away from the bar, trying to shake off my earlier fall. Better, June says, just the way Morky always does. She tries to slip away unnoticed, but I'm onto her this time. So I call out before she's able to slide out the halfway open door. Thanks for your help. Give my love to Gigi. Keep me posted on how she's doing, okay? I catch her eye in the mirror. We're looking at each other, but also not. And it's one of the things I like best about the reflecting glass. The surreal, removed aspect it can add to regular life. We're interacting. We're talking. We're seeing each other. But not really. Only through the glass. If pressed, we could say this never happened at all. You want me to tell her anything else? June says. Her lips twitch, like they are considering a smile, but aren't ready to pull themselves all the way up yet. Another message? Her eyebrows leap, as limber and expressive as her body when she's dancing. I want to defend myself, but I swallow down the words. Thank God I took a pill an hour ago, and am still clear and brave and sure from its impact. I control my impulses. You need to get out more, I say at last, brushing past her little accusation, and this time not even bothering to look at her in the glass, just saying it to my own leg as I stretch. I owe you, for, you know, helping me with my center. I'll take you out, okay? I don't expect her to say much of anything in response. She never hangs out, She's just not one of those girls. I turn again to check out her face for what little response it might give, and she's blushing. A pretty pink that goes from her throat to her nose. Sure, she says. Maybe sometime. That even voice finally shakes a little, and she slips out. In the physical therapy room, I'm sitting in a huge bathtub full of ice. The TV's blaring a bad reality show, and I hope the cold cubes tone down the achiness in my knee, and maybe even my heart. Or maybe this is just what life feels like after Alec. Murky, untethered, throbbing with unspeakable pain in unexpected places. Adele told me over the phone to dance the pain. But the pain in this case is rocky and nauseating, impossible to dance through. All I need is a glass of white wine and a towel turban on my head, and I'd be my mother, drowning her sorrows after my father left. In one of the small treatment alcoves, a trainer helps a young girl stretch out her sore quad. Her cries slip out from behind the privacy curtains. I turn up the TV volume, so I don't have to hear her or the chaos in my head. I used to come here with Liz. We'd get in the oversized tubs together, and right now, I'd be willing to have the stupid conversations she and I used to have about the calories in grapefruits versus watercress, the latest celebrity drama, over being alone. I close my eyes and sink farther into the water. I prefer cold baths to warm now. The chill pinkens my skin, seeping into my muscles, erasing the pain and resetting everything. My teeth chatter, but I clench them. I've been in here so long, my lips are probably blue, way longer than the trainer said I should.
You look like you could be dead, a cold voice says. And maybe that wouldn't be a bad thing.
I sit up. It's Henri. He reaches his hand into the base of the tub. I pull my legs back in, a deeper chill settling into my spine. He takes a cube of ice, puts it in his mouth, and sucks on it. Water dribbles down his chin as he smiles at me. Leave me alone, I say, not wanting a rerun of him all over me. He drops his hand back in my tub, his fingers grazing my toes. Water sloshes over the tub's edge as I flail, trying to avoid his touch. He laughs, loving that he can control me right now. I lift myself up to try to get out of the tub. His hand yanks my ankle down.
Not so fast, he says. This will work just fine.
He takes off his shirt, like he's going to join me in the ice bath. You can't get in here with me. It's against the rules, I say, like some suck-up kid who actually follows the PT room rules, or any rules for that matter.
Don't worry, I'm not joining you, he says, dunking his sweaty ballet shirt into my water.
He's got a tattoo I never noticed before. It's small, but I can make it out. Cassie's name, in a swirly script, scrawled across his chest. Ridiculous. He slaps the shirt at me. He wants me to react, to jump away from him again. Instead, I cross my arms over my chest, offering up a lazy smile, and wait for his arms to get tired of wringing out the shirt. I don't let him see the fear in my eyes, or how horrible I think he is. I don't let him see how disgusting I feel after he put his dirty shirt in the water with me. I can hold my own against Henri, against anyone. But he's not giving up either. What do you want? I finally say.
What are you willing to give me?
Nothing. I'm done with you. I look around the room to make sure no one is paying attention.
Are you really done?
He pushes his hands farther into the water. His fingers graze along my calf, then over my knee.
Or are you worried that I'll tell everyone that matters your secrets?
I flex, his eyes narrow. If you wanted to, wouldn't you have already done it? I say, as his fingers travel farther up my leg, his rough palm circling my inner thigh. I made out with you. A pity hookup. I thought we were done with this whole game. I try to get up from the water, aware of his eyes on my prickled skin, the goosebumps rising. He climbs in now, pushing me hard, and I sink back down into the tub, a single finger pinning me in place. I hate myself for not fighting away from him. I could shove my legs forward, kick the ice-cold water up into his face. But what if he does tell Mr. K? Worse, what if he tells Alec? I'd lose him for good. So instead of fighting it, I pull him in, close to me, his warmth melting my chill. I let his mouth explore mine, his hands wandering along my tank top, cupping my two ample curves, fingers exploring until they reach the small space covered by the tiny blue bikini bottom I'm wearing. That's when the trainer comes out from the back rooms. Out! She orders, and Henri grins, standing. Out now! The trainer's trying to maintain her composure, to follow protocol, but her eyes settle on Henri, and I know she's going to let him walk out without a reprimand. Pardon, he tells the woman. No need for concern. That was never going to happen, as much as she might want it. He smirks at me, still drowning in the tub, my lips bruised from cold or kissing, my ego smarting from the humiliation. And trust me, she wants it.
Chapter 30. June. Will you take care of Gigi tonight? Alec says to me outside the lobby elevator. The sound of his voice makes me nauseous. She's not sick, I say. Gigi nods in agreement while hobbling forward. Her foot is swaddled in soft gauze and a bandage, and nestled in a little boot. People have been stopping by our room for days, checking on her. Weirdly, Henri's been leaving her little cards and notes, and though she throws them away, I sometimes fish them out of the trash. They're all concern and sympathy, and the insistence that, when she's up to it, they should talk. Alone. That she should be careful. Maybe she should, but I don't know what that's got to do with me. I'm meeting Jaehee tonight. Finally, after weeks of broken promises. And I'm not a babysitter. And Gigi's not five.
I'm fine, she says.
But I can hear the worry between those two small words.
You've got to be freaked out, Alec says. I'd be freaked out. Just be a pal, June.
I might have plans, I say, trying not to let the irritation show on my face. Vague. Instead, I push the elevator button 100 times to signal that I want this conversation to end. I want to go up to my room. Jaehee and I are still a secret. I don't know if it's his decision or mine, but it's too soon to share. But maybe that will change when he finally sees me again. It's the perfect revenge. I can't wait for that moment when he realizes that he's actually way more into me than Seijin. I know that's how he feels. He won't come clean with Seijin, but it's me he calls at midnight, and we end up video chatting. I even fell asleep in the light last week after we spent hours chatting about art and dance and the restaurants his dad wants him to run and my father the ghost and how it will be when we can finally decide things for ourselves. And that's when I realized that, despite all my plotting and planning, this has become more than just vengeance. Our conversations make me crave him, his scent, his skin, his sleepy eyes on me, taking me in. It's been weeks since we've been together, and tonight, maybe, it will finally happen. I punch at the elevator button again. You know, Alec says after a heavy pause and switching his body to the other side of the staircase. You don't get the parts because no one trusts you enough to dance them.
It's not that you're not good enough. I've heard them talk about it. It's your attitude. It's that you have no friends. It's that you're so twitchy and weird with people.
The words hit me like a sock to the stomach and echo in the lobby over and over again. If it were Bette, I'd think it was a mind game, a way to get me freaked out. But Alex not like her. He's always been pretty nice. His words burn a little hole inside me.
I can't get any words out. What I want to say is, I used to have friends. I used to belong to a group. I used to be important.
June and I are friends, Gigi interrupts, the words floating like bubbles out of her mouth, and I'd like to pop them all over her face. Even in this moment, she's an optimist. Alex smiles, but it's mostly at her.
Thanks for your help, Alec,
Gigi says when I don't reply or agree that we are friends.
I'm okay. It's, you know, I'm trying not to let it get to me anymore.
I don't believe her. She's too calm about it, and she's already had two outbursts about smaller incidents. And I probably should have said something about being her friend. I don't want anyone accusing me of doing things to her. A natural conclusion that I don't need anyone making, since I'm her understudy and roommate. I want the role she has, and sometimes I like seeing her struggle around in her cast. But there are times when I like her. A little.
Let me know if anything else happens, okay?
He kisses her forehead in that patronizing way before turning back to me.
And June? Prove me wrong, you know?
I wonder if there's a threat in there. Alex's dad is the head of the board, one of the most important people at the conservatory. A conversation with Alec could be just that, or it could be a message from above. I get the feeling this might be the latter.
Fine, I say, hoping all four of these elevators will open at the same time and they'll get in a different one from mine. What's up with the elevators?
Alec yells.
They're not working right now, the front desk guy says. Gotta take the stairs. Are you serious?
Alec says.
I don't have time for jokes.
He turns back around.
You can wait an hour or maybe more. Or take the stairs.
Alec scoops Gigi up into his arms, despite her squealing, ear-shattering protests, and heads for the stairwells. I feel a little pinch inside, part of me coveting a little of what they have, and the other part wishing I didn't care. Hanging out with Jaehee has changed things a little. Maybe it's just a physical thing. Maybe it started as a way to get back at Seijin. But I feel like I can almost trust him. A few times, I've had to stop myself from showing him the box I found, from telling him how close I am to finding my father. There's no one I can trust with that. I climb the stairs slowly. I want to give Alec enough time to get up to the 11th floor, drop her on the bed, and get out. Out of breath, I wait on the top step, hoping Gigi's giggles will soon disappear, and I'll see Alec's blonde head zip out of our room.
Looking over your handiwork?
Someone says behind me.
You don't deserve to dance with us. You don't deserve to be at the school.
I turn around and Seijin glares at me. Her eyes are narrow slits and her teeth are clenched.
I know what you did, she says.
I turn my back on her. Her feet pound the wood and she dashes up the stairs to me. Her cold hand jostles my shoulder, yanking me around. The banister presses into my spine.
Get off me, I say. What's your problem?
I try to brush past her.
I know it was you who did all that stuff to Gigi, she spits.
My face drops and I try to compose myself.
Is this your attempt at a late April Fool's joke?
I quip back. I won't let her get to me. Not anymore. I'm about to be one of the top dancers, and then she'll beg for my friendship again. And I'll have the satisfaction of saying no.
She messed up my life, and she's the reason I have no friends. I think I lost the ability to make friends after her.
You wrote that message on the mirror and put all that stuff about her in the light. And that disgusting cookie. And I know you put the glass in her shoe. Of course you would. You're her understudy. If she doesn't dance, you do, she says, her grip tightening on my shoulder, her voice echoing up and down, even reaching the 18th floor. Who else besides you is that desperate?
I want to scream at her, and I want one of the RAs to catch her keeping me here against my will. But most of all, I want to shut her up.
You did all of it, she yells. You make us all look bad. You know that?
Her accusations hit me one after the other. I start to feel a little afraid. Someone might hear her. They might believe what she's saying. Blood drains from my face. My heart thuds in my chest. I want to vomit. Empty myself of all of it. Her words, my tea, the noodles I picked out for lunch, the accusations.
I didn't do any of that.
I defend myself, but my voice is shaky.
You don't know anything. What I do know is that you're jealous of her. You always have been that type of girl.
She's got me boxed in and I can't get away.
Remember when we were 8 and you stole my jeweled leotard?
She says, her eyes bursting with anger.
You lied and lied and lied about taking it. Then I caught you wearing it in your room, twirling in front of your mirror, playing that stupid little music box.
I shake my head, trying not to remember that. She didn't know what was going on, that it was the year my mom told me my dad didn't want to be my dad, that he didn't want a relationship with me. I think of the music box on my shelf, and the tinkle of its melody crowds into my head. I was just borrowing her leotard for a little while, pretending to be a princess. I planned to give it back. I did some bad things, I guess, when things were so confusing at home. But isn't that to be expected? I was just a little girl, and I had a secret the size and shape of a fully grown man.
Or when you told Heiji she was fat, she says.
My face flames.
She'd locked me in the storage closet.
I'm seething as the memories flood back to me. All their torture, all their meanness, all the pressure from my mom and the absence of a dad.
Or how you think it's cool to text my boyfriend. Yeah, I saw your name pop up on his phone last night. He doesn't like you, June. He takes pity on you, but that's because he doesn't really know what a bitch you are.
I'm not listening to you anymore. I didn't do anything wrong, and you're not going to make me feel like I did. It takes all my self-control to keep my voice in check. I'm shaking, so I hold the railing and swallow fears that she knows what's really going on with Jaehee and me. I'm not ready for her to know yet. But the rage inside me bubbles up, killing that tiniest hope that existed inside me, that we could one day go back to how it was. The smallest corner of my mind that missed her. No, I will destroy her.
Get away from me, Seijin,
I say, then lean forward.
Or maybe that's your problem.
You don't want to. I purse my lips at her. Her eyes bulge and she clenches her teeth.
I don't know what you're talking about. And as a matter of fact, I should have figured it out earlier. You know, Mr. K pulled me to the side. He asked a few of us separately if we knew anything about what was happening to Gigi. I should have told him I thought it was you. I'm going to tell him first thing in the morning. Lee Jun Kim is responsible for all the things that happened to Gigi. She's a bitch. She's terrorizing her poor roommate. Your mother will be so proud. Oh, wait.
She'll probably hate you too after she finds out, just like the rest of us.
Poor June!
No father, and then no mother.
Shut up!
I scream, not realizing it's at the top of my lungs. My vision goes blurry, and I can't quite see her face. I imagine her marching into Mr. K's office, saying that she knows something, and telling him that I'm violent. He'll offer her a seat, listen intently to her lies. He'll call Mr. Lucas into the office and make Seijin recount her tale to him. Mr. Lucas's face will twist with disappointment and shame and embarrassment. They'll dismiss me from the school. There will be stories on the dance sites about how the ballerina from the American Ballet Conservatory got kicked out for hitting another dancer. I wonder what Jaehee would think, and hate myself for caring.
It's all so obvious, she taunts.
I hear the blood pounding through my veins, and my heart is a drum beating a war chant. I'm ready to hurt someone. Not anything terrible, not real violence, but just enough to show them not to count me out. To remind them how powerful I really am. I don't know what I'm doing, just that my hands are on her shoulders and I'm shoving her. Hard. Her mouth opens and shuts, but I can't make out her words. She falls backward and tumbles down 5 steps. Her bottom makes a thud when she hits the wood, and her head clobbers the wall. Bet appears at the bottom of the staircase. She races up, catching Seijin before she tumbles any farther.
June!
Bet hollers, and I snap out of it, suddenly aware of where I am and what has happened. I clomp down to where Bet is cradling Seijin. I put my hands on my head, not sure what to do. My voice tucks itself into my throat, shutting it down so I can't speak. Did Bet see me push her? Did I really push her? No, she must have fallen. Seijin is hysterical. She screams and hollers, her mascara running in black streaks down her alabaster skin. I try to reach for her.
Don't touch me, she shouts. She pushed me! Ijeon pushed me!
Bet walks her down several sets of the stairs, letting Seijin's spindly arms drape across her shoulders, her frail body leaning against Bet's stronger frame for support, and they disappear, headed for the 4th floor RA office. I collapse on the staircase.
You better come with us,
Bet calls up to me when she notices I'm not following.
You don't want to look any guiltier, right?
A few minutes later, we're all in the RA office. Seijin cries into the phone. I hear her mom's Korean curse words fly through the receiver, and I know they're directed at me. I hear my mom's name, Kangji, and I know Seijin's mom is going to call her, even though it's midnight. My heart hasn't slowed down yet. Bet sits beside me on the puffy couch, her fingers fidgeting constantly with her little locket. The RA switches between 2 calls, one with Mr. K and the other with Mr. Lucas. My tiny stomach folds in on itself.
What happened? Bet whispers to me.
Her words are heavy with knowledge. She already knows the answer to her own question, but she wants me to confirm it.
I shrug.
I've gone over it in my head like a ballet. Each move I made and each one she made. The memory of Seijin's words float around me like music, repeating in refrains. I don't know how to answer Bet. I don't know if she's on my side.
I don't know,
I say. The RA hangs up and stands in front of Bet and me. Seijin walks into a private area, still crying on the phone.
What happened?
The RA asks. I wish they would all stop asking the same question over and over. It's making me dizzy.
My mouth is glued shut. I can't seem to open it. I sit on my hands, wanting and needing my compact, just so I could have something to hold on to. Something safe.
The RA looks at Bet, waiting for an answer. And Bet's big blue eyes land on me.
I stayed late to practice in Studio B, Bet begins. Then I had to take the stairs because the elevators are out. I heard yelling and shouting when I made my way up, and I saw Seijin fall. I complained to the janitor the other day about how slippery they are. I gawk at Bet, knowing she saw me push Seijin. The lie leaves her mouth so easily, I almost believe her myself. The RA turns to me. Is that true, June? Seijin saying you pushed her. I didn't, I whisper. She fell. Then why would she say that? The RA asks. I don't know, Bet answers for me. We've always had issues, I tell the RA. The phone on the desk blares. Well, go to bed. We'll deal with this in the morning. She picks up the receiver but cups her hand over it. In the meantime, stay away from Seijin, June, she warns. And I know she suspects me, but also trusts Bet because she's a legacy here. No one wants to accuse her of lying and have to deal with her crazy mom. Seijin returns to the room just as we're leaving. She calls me something nasty in Korean that I've heard on one of my mom's soap operas. She lies across the couch with an ice pack, still sniffly and red in the face from crying. Bet and I take the stairs up to the 11th floor. I feel her looking at me, but she doesn't speak. She's waiting for me to say something. Finally, when we get to our floor and she turns to go to her room, I grab her arm. Thanks, I say. She doesn't reply at first, and I assume her silence is, you're welcome. Is it true, though? She says instead. What? I answer. I heard what Seijin said. She looks me right in the eye. Did you do all that stuff to Gigi? No, I say with a frown. Did you? Bet's face pinches. No! Well, you haven't exactly always been a model citizen, I remind her. We all know that. Neither have you, she snaps back. With accusations flying and me suddenly implicated, I want her involved. I want her secrets out too. Not just mine, because the more everyone knows her dirty secrets, the more likely it is that she is to blame, over me. At least, that's what I keep telling myself.